The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Okay, Tov. Yeah, so many things going on around, so many stories, unfortunately, most of them not too good. Two attacks yesterday carried out in Israel targeting Israeli security services, a stabbing attack in the old city of Jerusalem at one of the entrances to the Temple Mount directed towards two security force members patrolling the old city who were stabbed. The assailant was shot on site at the location. Hamas afterwards acknowledged that he was one of their members. Lots of controversy about exactly how the person was shot. Of course, that is always going to be the big issue, you know, humanitarianism and dealing with people properly, despite the fact that they come armed with a weapon to kill you. And what becomes important thereafter is how you treat them, whether it's all humanitarian. I'll park all of that to one side for a moment, just to maintain that, you know, these attacks continue to be carried out. Another attack also carried out towards two members of Israel's security forces in the Samaria area, in an Arab village of Silat al-Harithiya in Samaria last night. This attack was one of these ramming attacks. Fortunately, the two border police fighters who were subject to the attack were actually in a vehicle, and another vehicle, an assailant vehicle, actually drove up and tried somehow to drive their military vehicle off the road. The two soldiers in the vehicle were slightly injured. The driver of the attacking car was arrested. So fortunately, even though those two attacks were carried out, on this particular occasion, all of the Israeli security services members, while being treated in hospital for their injuries, seem to have survived okay and done okay. But, you know, there is never a dull moment and there is never a moment to rest. There is always the threat of attacks taking place. And of course, now that the eyes of the world are elsewhere, it's very, very easy to do these things, to carry out these attacks somewhat under the radar and just, you know, keep, as Hamas says, our members will either complete their attack victorious or as a martyr. Those are the two options that they have available, and they mentioned it yesterday again in the context of the attack in the old city of Jerusalem.
And so it continues. One shouldn't think that just because there's a war happening in Ukraine that there isn't still somewhat of a war happening back at home in Israel. Israel Foreign Minister Yair Lapid was in Riga yesterday, and that was to meet with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. What do we know about this?
Well, again, you know, Israel very much on the international stage. And Yair Lapid is treading a very, very interesting path, because while Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has not yet publicly criticized Russia in any way, acknowledging that Russia is the aggressor, he's not made any public statements along those lines. And as far as I'm aware, he has implemented a three-line whip across all members of government not to make public statements about the war in Ukraine. It seems as if Yair Lapid is somewhat released from that, because he does condemn Russia's invasion of Ukraine, even though he makes clear that Israel is trying to tread this very, very difficult middle road. On the one hand, not to formally castigate, condemn Russia. On the other hand, to try and do whatever is possible to help Ukraine, all the time knowing that the Israeli government's view, and indeed the Israeli nation's view on this particular war in Russia, in Ukraine, I'm sorry, is that, you know, Russia is clearly an aggressor, and that there seems to be little way of excusing or of, you know, giving any justification to the way in which Russia is behaving. Yesterday in Riga, Yair Lapid met with the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. We understand that there was discussion about Israel's attempts to mediate, about Prime Minister Naftali Bennett's meeting with President Putin on Saturday. There were some concerns coming out of the U.S. administration that Vladimir Putin may well be trying to use Naftali Bennett to somehow create a more positive image for himself on the international stage, because whereas currently he seems to be international enemy number one, it's also, it concerns the US administration that these meetings with the Israeli prime minister and the interactions in general with the Israeli prime minister may well be somewhat laundering his international image. And that's not what they wish to see. And we understand that Israel discussed the possibility of sending helmets and ceramic vests to Ukraine, which is kind of on the edge of what Israel feels that it's able to do under the circumstances, whereas sending humanitarian aid has been a no-brainer. 100 tons, I understand, at least, of humanitarian aid have been sent, and of course, attempts to evacuate people from the war zone. When it comes to supplying more military-style equipment to Ukraine, that kind of edges towards a very controversial place in terms of Israel's ongoing relationship with Russia. But it seems as if these helmets and ceramic vests will indeed be sent by Israel, having had the request made by the Ukrainians, because they seem to be short of that information. We understand that there was discussion between Yair Lapid and Antony Blinken concerning Israel's role along with Germany and France in trying to mediate. It's not clear exactly what was discussed between them, but that was part of the discussion. We know that there was also discussion about trying to engineer an immediate ceasefire and talking about humanitarian corridors. There's been quite a lot of discussion about humanitarian corridors. Russia apparently has agreed to some, but then not adhered to them, and on other occasions has not agreed to it. So it's not exactly clear right now what the issue is with those corridors, which are really designed to allow refugees, people who want to leave the war zone, to leave pretty safely. We understand that there was also talk about the Iranian nuclear agreement, and also a talk about some of the things that are going on in Syria. Interestingly, we understand that Antony Blinken does intend to visit Israel in the coming weeks. And so that discussion is likely to continue. But also, you know, along with what's going on in Ukraine, we can't ignore what's happening in Vienna and what's happening with the Iranian nuclear agreement, because all of that really is going on in parallel, and we're somewhat losing the public view because of the war in Ukraine.
Yeah, it's certainly something that I worry about, because that's when these things go under the wire and not enough scrutiny is given to them. But we'll certainly see what is happening there. Ukrainian's foreign minister has accused El Al of earning money covered in Ukrainian blood by continuing to fly to Russia.
Yeah, I mean, highly controversial statement by Dmytro Kuleba, who is the Ukrainian foreign minister, harshly criticizing El Al. And in fact, his statement didn't criticize El Al for continuing to fly to Russia. He said that El Al is covered in Ukrainian blood because it's continuing to accept payments via the Russian banking system Mir in order to evade the sanctions that have been put on Russia by the international financial systems. And currently in Russia, as I understand it, Visa and MasterCard, international credit cards, cannot be used or not accepted because those companies have ceased their operations in Russia as part of the ongoing sanctions. And so the only system, as far as I understand, that is currently working in Russia as far as the credit card system is concerned is this Russian banking system called Mir. There was also talk about the possibility of the Russians taking on a Chinese-based credit card system just in order to try and overcome the current issue that they have with regard to international payments. But Dmytro Kuleba was very, very critical of El Al, saying that they are preferring to take money soaked in Ukrainian blood. And of course, I think this is really more about El Al still flying to Russia than it is about using the Mir banking system, because I suppose the two go together. If you want to fly to Russia and you want to be able to sell tickets and you want people to be able to use credit cards, then you need to have a way of allowing them to use credit cards. And currently, at least Visa and MasterCard are not available. I'm not quite sure about some of the other well-known credit card company systems, but clearly sanctions taking hold in Russia. Now, it's interesting that El Al put out a statement to refute this. And what El Al said is that they are still conducting flights to Russia according to the particular request of the Israeli government and due to Israel's unique obligation to rescue and evacuate Russian Jews. Now, I'm not aware of the fact that there is a massive flight of Russian Jews to Israel, even though we do know that quite a number of Russians have tried to leave Russia, those who have the ability, those who have dual nationality and are able to go to another country fairly easily, apparently are taking up on this option because of the impact of sanctions in Russia. People are concerned that they're not going to be able to get basic supplies. They're not going to be able to earn money, particularly those who might be employed by foreign companies whose money comes from outside of Russia. They won't be able to earn their salaries. I've heard of stories of many Russians actually making their way to Georgia in order to somehow try to escape this whole sanction system. So it is quite possible that there are Russian Jews who wish to come to Israel as a result of this war and as a result of the hardships that they're suffering in Russia. And it may well be very feasible that Elal would fulfill that particular role to help them come to Israel in the event that they need to escape. Clearly, the main focus right now is helping Ukrainian Jews escape from the war zone, and for those who wish to come to Israel either on a temporary basis or to make their homes here, to facilitate all of that. But it's interesting that El Al has got caught up in this whole spat between Ukraine and Russia. Many airlines have indeed chosen no longer to fly to Russia and have also decided to close their airspace to Russian airplanes. As far as I am aware at the moment, Israel has not decided to close its airspace to Russian planes. And of course, as we understand, there are still Israeli planes flying to Russia. It's interesting to know what the listeners out there think about El Al continuing to fly to Russia. Is our obligation towards the Jewish community in Russia more important than making any statement against Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and therefore stopping potentially the flights going to Russia? It's an interesting debate to hold.
It really is. 34519 or 0618951019. Should Israel continue to fly to Russia at a time like this? 34519 or 0618951019. Anthony, I did want to talk to you about this because I think it's a very important conversation. More information has surfaced about the Iranian drone and drones, in fact, that were intercepted by the Israeli Air Force last year. So we spoke about it. We knew that there was more to the story. What do we now know?
Well, quite a number of things have come out, which I think make the whole story quite fascinating. And of course, this comes very much against the backdrop of those discussions, as I mentioned earlier, in Vienna that have been going on surrounding the Iranian nuclear agreement. We understand that the chief negotiator nominated by the Iranian regime conducting negotiations in Vienna has now returned to Tehran. Some have positioned this return to Tehran as somewhat unexpected, not part of the program. The Iranians have tried to present it as being entirely part of what was already planned anyway. But there is a feeling that it's a kind of now or never situation, that this is a make or break point for those particular discussions. And indeed, the European negotiator has presented it as such, saying now the ball is in the court of Iran to decide what they want to do moving forward. Interestingly, Russia has come out, Sergei Lavrov has come out saying any deal that's done with Iran here needs to include a clause which says that Russia will still be able to continue to trade with Iran in spite of any ceasefire arrangement that might result from the war in Ukraine. So he's now linking the two together, and he's afraid that any ceasefire agreement with Ukraine may well tell Russia that they are not in a position to trade with Iran. And he's trying to build that in and to order to secure that particular right. But just back to the story of the Iranian drones that were intercepted en route to the Gaza Strip last year, not to Israel, but indeed they were on the route to the Gaza Strip. We understand that these were drones sent from Iran all that distance, which is not insignificant, carrying apparently a cargo of pistols for Hamas in Gaza. That was what these drones were carrying. And what's perhaps more interesting than this idea that Iran may use drones in order to supply arms and ammunition to their proxy armies all that distance away. And let's not underestimate the distance that is involved here in flying from Iran to Gaza Strip. But what's perhaps more interesting than that is the fact that Israel used its stealth bombers, the F-35s, to actually carry out this interception and to shoot down these drones with the cargo before the cargo actually managed to get to near to the Gaza Strip. And this was acknowledged by Defense Minister Benny Gantz. And also some video footage has been released showing the moment at which those drones were intercepted. Apparently this cargo was being tracked by Israel pretty much from the moment it left Iran, and was being helped along the way by some of the Arab countries that were being used as an overfly route. So cooperation between Israel and its neighbors in order to prevent this infiltration of this cargo of pistols into the Gaza Strip. So on this occasion, a failure on the part of Iran to open up that particular supply route. But I have no doubt that they will continue to try this out. We do know that Iran already used drones to attack an Israeli-owned ship, all of this over the last few years. Interestingly, the drones that were intercepted last year, this incident all took place just a month or so before, sorry, 2 months, not a month, but 2 months before Operation Guardian of the Walls, when Israel launched its attack against Hamas infrastructure in the Gaza Strip. And one wonders to what extent Iran and Hamas were already coordinating ahead of what they thought might be an uptick in activities in this conflict. And they already anticipated that this operation was going to happen. To what extent they actually precipitated the action, the conflict taking place, and therefore to what extent they were trying to hastily rearm in the Gaza Strip with this cargo of pistols coming from Iran. I think it's a fascinating story, fascinating that Israel was able to use the F-35s apparently for the first time in the world in order to intercept a situation like this. But of course, Israeli intelligence comes to the fore here, and nothing can happen under the radar without the Israeli intelligence knowing about it.
Absolutely. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, it has just gone 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM. Good morning.